Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, and it's the 17th of October, and I'm recording at 10:25 p.m., and that's still British summertime. Now, this being Friday, this is the big picture long-term outlook for the various asset classes, but first, let's just start with a quickest review here, well, at least of stock markets. Which I will run through for you. And it was a day that belonged to the bulls. Not a bad way to end the week, always. The exception, so Japan was down on average across their indices about 0.5%. Hong Kong was higher, but Shanghai Composite was down a bit, but well off its lows on the day. Taiwan down 1.4%. That was a bit bigger. South Korea down almost 1%. The others were all higher. And best gain looks like Malaysia among that group. And then if we look at Europe, which had really been hammered earlier in the week, but we saw a lot of gains. Well, I'm looking at 9 indices. That's not all of them, obviously, but they are the what Bloomberg considered to be the 9 biggest ones. And we have a number of gains of over 3%. Sweden is over 3%. Italy has the best gain, 3.42%. Germany, 3.12%. The Euro Stoxx 50 index, which is across top 50 shares across Europe, up 3.05%. Wall Street, strong rally as well. The Dow had the best gain, up 1.63%. Now the S&P also up nearly 1.3%. NASDAQ 100 just under a 1% gain. The Russell 2000 was actually down on the day. It rallied back up, I think, to 1100 or very close to it, and then closed lower. You remember that's been the cat in the and that's been the canary in the coal mine. And Wall Street had been stronger. The Dow did best in terms of holding its gains, and the other big indices gave up a quarter to a third of their gains, more like a quarter of their gains. And just to put that in a little bit of perspective, all the U.S. indices are below their 200-day moving averages, except for the NASDAQ 100 and the Transport Index. Both of those are above their 200-day MAs. And the S&P, the most important one of all, that's just slightly below its 200-day moving average. And I just want to give you an idea of where we stand on the year to date, because if we look at Wall Street, it's pretty much what you'd expect, I think, or what we expected after a very, very good year last year. And not much has happened here. The Dow is down just over 1%. The S&P and the NASDAQ up a little above 2% on average there. Canada lower, Mexico lower by a couple of points. Brazil, for all its problems, up nearly 5%. Then we get to the European indices, and I repeat, I'm only showing 9. Here on this main Bloomberg screen, but they're all down. And the biggest decliner, Germany, nearly 14%. And in the Asia Pacific, which I will have in a minute here, the Asia Pacific region, starting with Japan, that's what's done rather poorly in here, because we're down over 12% by the Nikkei 225. The Hong Kong Hang Seng Index, after all its protests against China's rule, down 1.25%. The Shanghai Composite Index, though, respectable, up 9.4%. Incidentally, these are all in U.S. dollars, all in U.S. dollar terms, not local currencies. Just so you get a fair comparison here. Taiwan down 3%, South Korea nearly 6.5%, Australia down 3.33%. Biggest winner across these markets, India, with the Sensex up 24.5%. Then small declines, well, Malaysia 4% nearly, 1% for Singapore. Thailand, good gain, up over 18%. Same for Indonesia. And New Zealand up a little over 4.5%. So that puts, I think, some of the the year's performances in general. Overall, it's obviously a tougher year than what we had in 2013, and that's not surprising, and given the gains, particularly the fourth quarter gains that we saw last year. Okay, now, what's going to happen here? Well, a lot of people were quite ebullient today, and they also looked at that James Bullmer comment from the Federal Reserve, saying that the Fed should not close out QE this month, as was originally planned, but give it a little bit more time. And then you've got some people cheering for the Fed coming along and actually increasing the QE. I don't think they'll do that. I don't think it would be unreasonable if they decided not to suspend QE this month. But they will. That would still be a surprising decision, in my opinion. But obviously, I'm not a fly on the wall in the next Fed meeting. Really, there are a number of people that are hoping that the Fed is going to come to their rescue, or to create, maybe to put it another way, is to create a very favorable environment for them. Well, we already have very accommodative short-term interest rates. But over the last 5.5 years, the Fed has done just that. It's tried to, it was definitely determined to push the stock market up on the basis that that would improve confidence and help the global economy. And I think it has done that to some respect. It hasn't helped it as much as a lot of people hope, but it's in line with other credit crisis recessions. And the U.S. economy is showing this modest recovery rate. But the point that I don't like about stock markets right now is the loss of uptrend consistency characteristics on Wall Street. And this, I'm speaking specifically here on Wall Street, of course, and it is the most influential stock market by far. So when you have a strong upward trend characterized by higher lows and higher highs, and the higher reaction lows are more important than the higher highs, that tells you that you've got a demand-dominated environment. And the stronger that bull trend becomes, the more consistent and persistent that demand advantage will appear to be on the charts. Now, as you know, we have broken this week beneath the 200-day moving averages. We have broken the previous reaction low, and we have also seen the biggest correction on Wall Street indices. You've got to go back on most of them. You've got to go back to 2012 to see a bigger reaction than we've seen recently. I'm just going to take the headset off and cough. There we are. Better. A little better. Sorry about this scratchy voice. I will scratch on here. So, again, that setback that we've seen has really it's taken away most of the consistency characteristics that we were seeing. Now, one could argue, I'm not making this point, but some people are, one could argue that, well, the Russian situation and the sanctions and Ebola and also the war against ISIL in the Middle East, those are all sort of temporary black swan events, and they will be contained and have less and less influence on investor sentiment and less of a declining impact on the global economy. Well, I hope they're right. I hope they're right on that. But at this time, at this moment, I would say that that conclusion is premature, and that really having lost the uptrend consistency characteristics for the S&P and the other, well, all of the U.S. indices, we have a somewhat higher risk than we have had previously. And you got the flavor of that, really, in the sharp moves downwards that we saw here this week. Now, going in and buying aggressively here, again, it depends what you hold. You can ride out this corrective phase, and a lot of people will actually do that. But to be buying again up here at these levels on the basis is that the Fed is going to come in and support you even further, I would be uncomfortable with that conclusion, but we will see. The chart will show us, and what we need to see is a new high on the big indices such as the S&P and the NASDAQ 100 index and the Dow Jones Industrial Average. On the other hand, I think there's a better, somewhat better chance that we see a lower high and then get back down and test the lows that we saw yesterday. And that would indicate a further broadening pattern, and a lower high would be another evidence of a short-term bearish influence. Now, if that happens, and I think that's a better than 50-50 bet that the bearish side does dominate in here in the short term, that could push markets lower. And it's less a matter of that happening because of the fundamentals of the economy, which I don't think are changing. We still have this modest recovery rate that is gradually picking up. It's all about the leverage, and that people just increase that leverage as Wall Street continued to move higher. And when they start to get margin calls or see profit erosions, if you've got a lot of leverage, those profits can be eroded very, very quickly, and that can lead to forced selling. So I think it's still a bit risky. Now, some people have said, well, you know, why not buy? You've had a sharp setback. Why not buy, I guess, around the globe generally? I mean, some shares that you actually like. Well, fine, if those shares are very competitively valued. In other words, if you've got a PE ratio, an estimated PE ratio that's around the 10 to 11 level or below 10, then and if it has a decent covered dividend, then that's not too risky. But I would be very careful about many of the more highly valued shares, and I think it would be a dangerous policy. Okay, now what about long-dated government bonds? Well, they're really very low, and that's going to keep central banks relaxed for the most part. There are the deflation concerns overall. I think those are it's way exaggerated in terms of the USA. I don't think that's a deflationary situation, but Europe is another story, and we certainly have some significant deflationary pressures in Europe. Incidentally, those long-dated government bonds in Greece pushed a little higher in here today after that very sharp rise that we saw yesterday. So, but it's so there. If we do get a bigger shakeout, we can expect for stock markets. Now, if we do get a bigger shakeout for stock markets, we can expect some of the more the bond 10-year bond yields for some of the more suspect economies, and Greece is not far from the top of the list. We could expect those yields to widen further, which would not improve confidence overall. As far as the Fed is concerned with interest rates at this level, it's obviously puts the Fed under absolutely no pressure to start raising short-term interest rates. So one of the things that investors had been worrying about at the beginning of this softening of stock markets was that the Fed might be raising interest rates shortly after year-end, if not before, and some Fed governors were even calling for a hike in short-term interest rates. The Bank of England was talking about it. Some people were forecasting the UK would be the first to raise interest rates this year or early next year. I think that's well and truly off the table. So investors, I think, can rightly take some comfort for that. But these are factors that we're certainly going to see in the future. We will go back to, as the global economy recovers, it'll take time. But I've been talking about a 3 to 5 year period, time period from current levels. And I think it's there are conditions that can cause choppy markets. And I've said to expect at least one cyclical bear market of between 20 to 30%, and that we could easily get a couple of those during the period. It's by no means a disaster situation at all, but the policy and or the warnings are obvious. Be careful about overvalued shares. And I think save some capital so that you can buy on significant corrections. And I don't think we will see a period where markets are as stable as really the U.S. indices have been over the last couple of years. Okay, I think that again, bond yields will mainly take their cue from, of course, the GDP figures overall, and you also saw the way they responded to moves in the stock market here. And some people feel, and you can count me among them, that we really the bubble that we really have is in these long-dated government bonds. But it's a bubble with a qualification which is not all that bearish in the very short term, except for the most questionable economies in terms of governance and potential and control of debt. We have still this unusual situation where central banks in certainly the USA have been buying these bonds, and in a number of other countries, in Japan to a very big extent. And the European Central Bank is very much wanting to do this really quite aggressively, and I think they do need to do it. And you're not going to get a major bursting. State the obvious. You're not going to get a major bursting of a bond market bubble reflected by these record low yields when central banks are still buying or promising or threatening to buy that government paper. But on a longer term basis, we are going to see those yields push up. And the only way that could be avoided is if we saw these countries get into a Japan-type situation. A few of them will. And of regions, the biggest risk for that, as I've already said, is within Europe. Hopefully it avoids it. I think if you let Mario Draghi, if the Germans let him off his leash, that risk will be lowered. Okay, enough said on that. What about currencies in here? You've got a strong Chinese renminbi. You've obviously got a strong dollar in here recently. It had come down earlier in the week. We saw the dollar index pick up a little bit here today. It's just back up above 5, just below the 85, that is, just below the 85.20. 2-0 level, and it's been a very volatile week here overall. I do feel that there is a longer-term upward bias to the U.S. dollar from a very low base level because of the U.S.'s ability to fulfill its own energy requirements, and also because of its lead in so many technologies. And these are all extremely positive factors here, and they can underpin a firm dollar. While the U.S. economy is still somewhat suspect, or I'll put it this way, not running on all cylinders, the Fed will be wary of too much dollar strength. I've made this point before, and it's an obvious one. I think that we do need to bear in mind. And no government wants to see its currency surge sharply higher in this competitive global environment. That's something I've been saying for several years here, and I think it's largely true here. You will see there are a few countries which suffer from it seems like almost terminally poor governance, and of course then they have very weak currencies. But I'm talking about the more viable economies, and the I put it this way, the rule is not too much volatility in currencies. And the exception when people become investors become really quite nervous, as we've seen in recent weeks, then some of those currency moves become more volatile. If I'm underestimating dollar strength, and remember, I on a long-term basis I expect it to range higher, subject to the Fed's inclination and also GDP growth. And a stronger dollar certainly can pressure some of those emerging markets which have dollar borrowings, and that is a risk going forward that we want to watch out for. Okay. what about these commodity markets? Well, my goodness, we've seen the industrial commodities take a real beating. Earlier in the year, we saw the agricultural commodities, for the most part, not coffee, not cocoa, I think, but we saw the grains and beans, for instance, experience huge declines, and they were down today here. Incidentally, they had firmed up a little bit on very wet weather in the USA for the harvest season, but that might have eased a little bit, I notice here. We've got declines in here today. But let's go back to the industrial commodities and then the precious metals. Industrial metals have really fallen quite sharply over the last couple of months. They had been staging a gradual ranging recovery. And I think the big change psychologically was when those iron ore prices just kept pushing down and down. And the reason for that is that you've had Rio Tinto and BHP for the most part, excuse me, the low-cost producers. They have been trying to eliminate some of the competition, and they've been actually succeeding because they're very big, very well financed. They're very low-cost producers. But this is a power play that's going to go on for a little longer here overall. And therefore, I think that we will see these industrial metals stay down longer than I had expected. And also longer than we have seen in other periods when global GDP growth is showing some evidence of recovery, but it's pretty patchy evidence of recovery, isn't it? And that's partly the problem here overall. But this will weigh on the prices of the metal producers, but they're cheap. The big ones, I'd be very, very, very wary of the more speculative ones, but the BHPs and the Rio Tintos can fund their yields, and they will be long-term beneficiaries if they knock out, for instance, a lot of the costly and inefficient Chinese iron ore manufacturing. And I think this power play will carry on for the lengthy medium-term period at least. Now, crude oil is somewhat similar situation here overall. And of course, the big key player here is always going to be Saudi Arabia. And I think that given the move, the bear market, and in other words, an over 20% decline that we've seen in oil prices, and it developed really very quickly, and that is not, it's not a situation of the demand for oil plummeting. It is a situation really of maintaining really quite high supply, or even increasing supply. And I think the Saudis, much the way BHP and Rio Tinto want to reduce some of the competition, that's the Saudis' role as I see it. They're wanting to knock out expensive production from Iraq to Venezuela to Canada, and especially in the USA. Can they do it? They can somewhat. But it's also a bit of a dangerous game to play. Looking at the charts of crude oil prices, well, you will know that they have accelerated lower in the last couple of days. They've started to pick up. And I think that the lows that we have seen this week are really close to a floor. They may actually be the lows, but it would depend. We'll have to see how much of a rally we get off these lows. And they were firmer today, but will they come back down and test and then go into a sideways ranging phase, or will we get a sharper recovery overall? Sometimes after accelerations lower, you get a faster recovery. And so I wouldn't rule out that possibility overall. But I think it's too soon to say that the overall period of fairly pricey oil is definitely over. I've said for a long, long time that with every passing month in which technology helps oil drillers, it helps shale producers, it helps the efficiency more often than not of renewable energy forms, that all these factors would continue to reduce the risk of another big spike to the upside. I think that there's no doubt in my mind that that risk of another spike to the upside is much lower today than it was 2, 3, 4, 5 years ago. But we're not entirely out of the woods, but so far, no problem here. And at today's oil prices, well, with the exception of oil producers, it's very good for the global economy. So countries that have been having problems with inflationary pressures and that have to import most of their oil, take India. This is a big benefit for India. It's a big benefit for Japan, but even more so for India, which is less efficient consumer of the crude oil prices. So and it's a, it's so generally overall. Today's oil prices, while they last at these levels, and I think they will, they'll go they'll go somewhat higher, but not back up anything like the, well, I put it this way, I think that they will struggle to hold gains of over $100, and right now we've got the WTI at 82.75, and the Brent is I think approximately $3 higher than that. So if the upper range is say $100, $110, that's not that bad for the global economy overall. And if I'm too optimistic, and if we see more of an $80 to $90 range, well, that's extremely good for the global economy overall. Okay, I think I've covered the grains. Good crops, good crop yields. We do have, I mean, in the great debate about whether we have global warming or not, I think we have enough global warming to create more favorable than unfavorable conditions for crops. That certainly wasn't the case prior to 2014, and we'll see going forward. But put it this way, the freeze risk is not as high as it was, and there's generally more moisture in the air, but it's not evenly distributed, as Californians know as well as anyone else. Okay, other factors in here. I think, forgive me if I've, oh, I have the precious metals. How could I forget? Don't interpret that. Some are higher today. It was the best rally in the stock markets. causes people to go for the ones they see as being largely industrial or precious metals that are more for industrial use, and that's palladium, up nearly $11 today, and platinum up nearly $10 here today. Silver is a little weaker, and gold is a little weaker. That gold bullion is at $1,238. So, lively, exciting, somewhat frightening week. I'm looking forward to the weekend, and I hope you are as well. All the very best to all of you.